All the way in the back. Good.
Got a bit of a, you know, they do more than one job. The division of labor isn't, you know, the utmost extreme. Just wondering, though, got the situation where someone's got to go through, you know, 10 to 15 years of intensive training to be able to do the skills of one job, and someone might have to go through a few weeks of training to do the skills of another job. How would you get sort of person A to get the same pay as person B if they have to do the 15 years rather than the 2 weeks?
Let's do that one, and then if you have another one, let's do the next one.
Oh, I was just going to sort of I think, I would love to live in the system that you're talking about, don't get me wrong, and I think under certain circumstances that it would be possible for people, you know, to get the same pay for different skill levels. But I'm just wondering, how do we go from the situation where we are now, where people's pure motivations are that I'm going to do 15 years of really hard core training to get the same pay packet as someone who does 3 weeks? I guess, in the practical sense, a lot of revolutions that are trying to build a new society have experienced this problem where they want the knowledge and the skills that these people have, but unless they're willing to give them the privileges that they're used to, these people are going to flee the country. And so I'm wondering, unless the whole world becomes a participatory economic society at one time, how are we going to keep these people in our society? Like, how do we go from where we are now to...
I understand what you're saying. First, I want to, and if I forget something, bring it back, okay? Because most of what you're asking is really strategic. But I do want to clarify this question of paying somebody who learns their skills relatively quickly as compared to somebody who learns their skills relatively long. I may even have did this, but I want to do it again just to be sure. You two are just about to get out of college, right? You're going to be a doctor, a surgeon. You're going to be a coal miner. First of all, is this participatory economics? No. But you're going to do doctoring. You're going to do some surgery and in the balanced job complex. You're going to do some coal mining and some other stuff that makes it a balanced job complex. Obviously, some desirable stuff along with it. Okay? Some of it will have other skills. But to become a surgeon, you're going to spend a certain amount of 8 years, right, going to medical school and learning those skills. Okay. So what do we remunerate you? Well, for those 8 years, we remunerate you for the effort and sacrifice that you're putting in while you're learning the skills. And for the next 40 years, we remunerate you for your balanced job complex. In fact, we may even have, you know, one power you could decide that during the time that you're training, you should have a balanced situation, right? So it might take a little longer, so you should, another one might decide that while you're getting education, it can be unbalanced. See what I'm saying? Other people. But there's no ethical problem, there's no remuneration problem. It's not that you're being remunerated less than others or in a different standard than others or anything like that, right? Now, there are going to be some people who don't like the standard, right? Because they want the standard that will cause them to make a fortune, right? That's why it's a struggle. That's what you're pointing out. And some of those people, so we have a new problem with participatory economics, and indeed we do. The new problem is that with what was called socialism, the capitalist class, who were reasoning correctly from the point of view of self-interest, don't like it, fight against it, right? And you beat them, you win it. With participatory economics, the capitalist class certainly doesn't like it because they're gone. As capitalists, they lose all that. So they don't like it. So again, they don't like it. But what about the coordinator class? What about the doctors and the lawyers and the engineers and all the rest of them? Do they like it or dislike it? Well, depends. They may well like what's called market socialism and centrally planned socialism because they get to be at the top, right? So they might support that. They may even be the prime moving forces for that in some cases, or they might not. It depends. But participatory economics, they're not going to like it out of self-interest, out of narrow self-interest. They'll only like it if they actually morally and ethically like it. Some will, probably a reasonable percentage. Some won't. The ones who won't, if it's happening in Nicaragua, are going to want to go to Guatemala or to Miami, right, to be able to get the higher income. My reaction is goodbye to bad apples. That's what the Cubans used to say. Adios. Right? I'd rather not try and stop you from going. The price of that is too high. And it's not such a big loss. Right? We'll train new people. Right? That would be... But if you're doing it on the scale of the United States, I don't think that the people in the United States who aspire to be doctors and lawyers, or the people who are doctors and lawyers, are going to run to Guatemala, right, to be doctors and lawyers, instead of being doctors and lawyers in a participatory economy in the United States and other balanced job complexes. So it's a little less of a problem for us than it would be there. It's not a problem. Right? There are other problems, too. There's all sorts of strategic issues we could discuss that we haven't. Obviously, the big question that arises, if you actually like this thing, is, well, how do we get it? Right? How do we get from what we have to what this? I'll just say a little bit about that. What you have to do is you have to build movements, obviously. You have to build movements that win changes, reforms, that win alterations of society. They might win affirmative action. They might win higher wages. They might win better conditions. They might win open books. They might win a new structure in the workplace to give workers some control. You win various gains. And you win these gains in a kind of a trajectory where the gains that you're winning leave you more powerful than you were before you started and inclined to try to win more. What do we expect the structures to be that we're creating in this process, in this revolutionary process? Well, one thing that we're going to create is these neighborhood councils. And these councils that would be consumer councils. And one thing that we're going to create is the workplace councils. And some of the kinds of things that we can do, by the way, nothing stops us from doing that. It isn't even against the law, right? At least the consumer ones. We start to do things. So imagine a consumer council in a five-story walk-up, and there's old people at the top and young people at the bottom, and the first thing they do is to shift the people around, right? Just sensitively recognizing a piece of reality and doing something that ought to be done immediately, right? No, you don't even have to fight to do that, right? But think of everybody doing things like that. It would be quite something if we had movements that were doing things like that. They wouldn't even have to fight, and yet the impact on solidarity and on commitment would be quite great. So we build these movements. Another thing that we have to do, remember I said, well, there's not just economics. There's kinship, there's culture, there's politics, and so on. Not just economics. So we have a movement around participatory economy, but we also have a movement around a new kind of polity, a new kind of kinship, a new kind of culture. Those movements have to be able to interact with one another. They have to be, all of them, a part of something that's bigger than any of them, that's sort of the greatest common sum of them. This is the way I envision it happening. When do we win? I think we win. Basically, we are unstoppable from then on when we have about a third of the population. When we have about a third of the population who desires the new things that we're seeking, and we have a third of the population that's opposed to it, and we have a third of the population that's watching television, doesn't know what's going on, we've won, is my estimate. Now, that's just winging it, right? But that's about my estimate. From then on, it's just winning. By the way, there are other people who decide they've won much earlier. So, for instance, when Che and Fidel and about 80 people hit the beach in Cuba, they looked at each other and said, it's all over but the shouting. That's actually pretty interesting, if you think about it, if you're an activist. Somehow, they got to the beach, they thought that beating the waves, and that was the hard part. When they got to the beach, they knew a lot of them were going to die, most of them. I mean, they're fighting a war with it, right? But they call it religion, call it faith, call it whatever you want to call it. One of the things that's going to be essential to winning is believing that you can, right? And the number of people who actually believe that at some deep level is very, very small, and it's one of our biggest problems. Because it means what people are doing, in the United States the slogan is, they're fighting the good fight, right? A lot of leftists talk about fighting the good fight. Think about that. I mean, that just makes me, that, you know, efficiency makes a lot of you nauseous, that makes me nauseous, right? If you're fighting the good fight, it's not as if it's immoral or it's bad in that way. It's not. It's better that a person would rather fight the good fight than not, right? But if you're fighting the good fight, it means, well, I'm fighting the good fight, I'm on the side of the angels. That's another slogan. I'm on the side of the angels, right? I want to be able to look at myself in the mirror and feel something other than disgust, right? These are reasons why people are in the movement. They're all good reasons, but they are all unsatisfactory. Because unless you're in the movement to win, you have no responsibility to try to win. All you have a responsibility to do is be on the side of the angels. Right? Be moral. Right? But you don't have a responsibility to seriously think about what it takes and to do the things that it takes. And there's no reason to do that because you don't really think it's possible. Well, I think it's possible. Right? And so I'm in the movement to win. Right? And it has some serious implications. So in 1969, we used to play something called socialist basketball, which is historic and now it didn't exist yet. I was a socialist. So we call this thing socialist basketball. Here's what socialist basketball was. You're playing socialist basketball. What you do is you act and behave and interact in such a way as to bring out the best in the person who you're guarding, right, or who's guarding you. So if you're a really good basketball player and I'm a bit of a schlump, right, and you're guarding me, your goal isn't to steal the ball every 20 seconds, right, and score over and over again. Your goal is to do precisely the level and the type of guarding that brings out the best in me. It's actually quite difficult, right? But it's not a competition. You're not trying to win. You're not trying to get the best points. So that was what we called socialist basketball. Now you tell me what happens if a team playing socialist basketball plays a reasonably good high school basketball team. What's the score? You know, the board is burning up, the one that's keeping the score. So it's 127-6, right? Because they're trying to win, and we're trying to make them play as best they can. This is a problem of revolution. We all want to play, at least all the good people, want to play socialist basketball. That's what we're going to do after we win. But there's this minor problem. The people who want to keep us from winning are ready to do anything. Anything. Right? Anything. So we have this problem that we can't play socialist basketball. We have to compete with them to win. It's a problem, because the implications of doing that could destroy what we're seeking. That's true. So we have to guard against that. So, for instance, if we have to rob banks, we probably shouldn't have the person who robs the banks become the head of the society. Does anybody know who I'm talking about? Stalin. Stalin, for the Bolsheviks, robbed the banks, and then they made him the head of the society. Probably wasn't a good choice. Right? The skills and the mindsets that he developed while he was robbing the banks, probably not conducive to that. You understand what I'm saying? So, well, here's another example. One of my heroes... Wrap it up? Really? Do we have to get out of here, or...? We actually have to get out of the room.
John's checking that.
All right, well, when he comes back and says so. Che Guevara is one of my heroes. So in Cuba, I'll call on you in 1 second. I'm a bit tired, so I get to ramble a little. He's one of my heroes for a whole host of reasons. But imagine this. Che said, in Cuba, we're fighting against Batista's army. We're fighting a guerrilla war. Where there's this one rule that we should try and always attain. Right? We should always succeed in any battle in killing the person who's in the front of the Batista's army, of the Cuban army's line of march. In every conflict, if nothing else, we should succeed in killing that person. Why? Yeah, because they want to create a situation in which nobody wants to be first. If nobody's first, what happens? Nobody's any place. Right? Somebody's got to be first. Now, this might sound silly and trivial, but the point is, what does that do to Che as a person? To have to think of things like that. This is not how we want to live in a good society, right? He's trying to create a good society, but he has to do things like that. Well, this is imposed on us, right? I'm not saying that this is what we have to do in the United States. We don't, right? Nobody has asked me yet, you know, violence. Somebody will ask now, and then I'll answer. But the point is that winning is strategic. When people have an aversion to winning because it's macho, because it's this, because it's that, it's a perfectly reasonable aversion. The trouble is, we have no choice, so we have to do it and do it well without it corrupting us.